We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, win time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and much more. And with its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
Every child deserves a team. That's the belief behind Jigsaw Learning, a proud sponsor of the B Podcast Network. And it's why the company, founded by educators Curtis and Lorna Hewson, focuses on ensuring success for all learners through collaborative response, an approach in which every child is supported by a team. Through customized professional learning that incorporates workshops, leadership development, online learning opportunities, and more, Jigsaw Learning can guide you every step of the way to create a plan to maximize the collective capacity in your schools. Learn more at jigsawlearning.ca.
Remember that promise you made that as soon as you retire from the classroom or get a little extra time, you're going to write a book? Yeah, your colleague made that same promise. And a family member and probably a friend. We all do it in education. The difference is, Sherry Pierce, this week's guest on Scene to Lead, actually did it. She wrote Life Skills, a handbook for parents and teachers of the intellectually disabled. And it is chock full of advice about educating this most special population. It does this through emphasizing collaboration among parents, teachers, administrators, and support staff. This was a great conversation, mainly because of all the ideas in her book being organized in a way that serves as a desk reference instead of just a straight-through read. Sherry talks about and provides us examples of how learning takes place in many different ways, including outside the classroom. But it's often messy when it's authentic. And that's how we support each other, is to ask questions before judging. Make sure we're giving teachers what they need so the students can get what they need. And you do that through listening. And finally, we talk a lot about building relationships with students and letting students know that they're liked and even loved. But even more important, we need to let students know that they are valued, that their presence actually adds to the community and the place where they are. Don't take it from me, though. Sherry Pierce explains it much better than I ever could in this episode of Seeing to Lead. Don't forget, if you like what you've heard, leave a 5-star rating and remember to write a review. The reviews help this show so that others can benefit from it just like you. Now, let's get to getting better with Sherry Pierce on Seeing to Lead.
Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it worth exploring. More time for personalized learning, increased choice and agency for students, and the increased engagement that comes along with it, dedicated time for intervention. Overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flexible time for any purpose. And with seamless SIS integration, a student locator, flexible daily rostering, and an intuitive mobile app, it eliminates the common challenges of implementation and management. Want to see for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
There's always a reason that somebody is doing something, and whether it's important to you or not is completely immaterial, because it's important to that child in that moment. You can't always get to everything in that moment, but everything that child's doing, there's a reason for it, and you can uncover it. And it works for adults too. If you have a teacher, if you're an administrator and one of your teachers is acting differently than she usually does or than he usually does, there's a reason for that. And maybe you are able to continue the relationship that you have with that professional, see what's going on. And that also contributes to making that school building a happier home.
Dr. Chris Jones here, and welcome to Seeing to Lead, a show designed to help leaders increase their ability to effectively support, engage, and empower their staff through intentional practices so that they create an environment where everyone reaches their greatest level of success. On Seeing to Lead, communication rules the day as we hear voices from both teachers and leaders in an effort to examine perspectives, highlight misunderstandings, and provide steps to ultimately bridge the gap between what teachers need and provide through thoughtful dialogue. This show is about amplifying voices, creating understanding, and providing information to help everyone continually improve. I want to personally thank you for taking the time. Now, let's get to getting better. Sherry Pierce was born and raised in Yonkers, New York, and was a special educator for the Yonkers Public Schools for 33 years. For 23 of those years, she worked with middle and high schoolers with moderate to severe intellectual disabilities. Following her retirement, she wrote a book, Life Skills, a handbook for parents and teachers of the intellectually disabled, which gives gentle advice about educating this most special population and emphasizes collaboration among parents, teachers, administrators, and support staff. She's also the sibling of an adult with developmental disabilities. Sherry received her bachelor's in special education from New York University and a master's in learning disabilities from Teachers College, Columbia University. She was named a leader in education by the JCY, Westchester Community Partners, in 2000. And I'm excited to talk to Sherry today because I think this topic is going to be incredibly helpful to you, the listeners, because oftentimes in schools, we find a disconnect between communicating with families, between families and teachers and administrators and support staff as to how to best serve these students who deserve the best attention that we have to give so that they can be successful and as successful as their peers. So Sherry, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, and I mentioned this before I hit record, if I had a nickel for every person that said they were going to write a book when they retired and didn't, I'd be a very rich individual. I'd be off boating somewhere. But that's not the case. So you are actually somebody that did this. You had experience in this field. You wrote about this field. Could you do me a favor and dive into your book a little bit? Tell us what it's about and let the listeners know how you came about to writing this guidebook for people.
Oh, with pleasure. I was an educator for 33 years, as you said. And when I retired in 2021, a lot of that was because of COVID and how much COVID changed the authentic, messy classroom that I developed after all those years. And I said, you know what, maybe this is the time. I had concerns about family. And I said, well, I think this is the time. So I said a very heartfelt, difficult goodbye. And I got home and I said, you know what, I still have something to say. I'm not really done. I have something to say. I wonder if I could write a book. And just as we tell our students all the time, you can do it if you try, and all of the things that we say to encourage people to follow really their dreams, I said, I'm going to do this. And I told enough people I was going to do it that I could not turn around from it. And I started writing, and I wrote and I wrote, and I came out with a long book. One of the things that I think is helpful in the book is even though it's very long, and I would encourage everybody on earth to read it cover to cover because it will just do wonderful things for you. However, people who do not have that kind of time, I did make the chapters stand on their own. So if you're just interested in the chapter on reading or class trips or how to teach your child basic mathematic concepts, the chapters stand on their own. And I tried to make it user-friendly that way. But this was definitely a labor of love because in writing the book, what I did was I went back in my memory, of course, but in all of the newsletters, which maybe we'll get a chance to talk about later in the conversation, that I had saved up in my attic for 33 years and my lesson plan books and pictures that I'd had, and really just took a walk back to see what I'd done, what worked, what didn't, what I learned from what didn't work, and a few of my family experiences, as well as I do have a brother with developmental disabilities, and part of the journey that my family took and things we stumbled over and what we tried to do. So it's a book with a little bit of everything in it.
That sounds, you know, you say a book with a little bit of everything in it, but it sounds like a little bit of everything, but just what anybody might need. I like the idea of taking the chapters and breaking them into something. So it's almost more of a desk reference book, the way it sounds to me. Am I thinking about that right?
You are. What I broke it up into, I encourage everybody, as I said, to read any parts that they like, but there's one part that's geared a little bit more toward teachers and one a little bit more toward parents, one for both, and then a section, two other sections, one on curriculum ideas for the teacher and the parent, because we know these children especially are getting a lot of instruction at home and a lot of help at home as well. And the last section, just a little bonus for people who make it all the way to the back of the book, is a play, believe it or not. My students, verbal, nonverbal, whatever their abilities were and whatever their challenges were, we put on a what I called a fairy tale theater every year. And I put one of the plays in the back of the book really to show people that you can do anything with these students. You'll modify, you'll make changes, you'll do what needs to be done. But a lot of the parents of my students didn't get that pleasure in past experiences of seeing their child perform in a play or doing something special like that. And I wanted to change that. So there's a play in the back of the book. We'll call it a bonus.
That's fantastic. You know, and the idea of how meaningful that is and how meaningful that experience for students in a school setting is, and how meaningful for the parents that is to see their child. I mean, what's more, and it's funny because I was just telling one of my sons this the other day that he'll never understand until he has children of his own how much I love him and what that feels like, and the feelings, the range of emotions that I have whenever he's doing something, and the hopes and dreams I have for him. And for the parents of intellectually disabled students that don't always get those experiences, to have them have those experiences, that is just so meaningful.
It was a pleasure, and it was never done without a box of Kleenex, because first we had parents sniffling in the audience and dabbing at their eyes, and it was so contagious, especially at the end where I allowed the children to come up and take their bows, which we practiced just as much as we practiced the lines of the play. And saying how far they'd come, yes, I should have bought stock in Kleenex, because that was the big school supply at that play every year.
So, I think of this book and I think about a desk reference. I think about something that, yes, you want to read the whole thing as a tool, because there often is a disconnect, right? We get teachers that teach students with moderate to severe intellectual disabilities and they do their thing. And quite often it's in a sub-separate room. And that other teachers aren't typically aware of exactly what that looks like. And administrators aren't typically aware of what that looks like. So how can I use this book, or what's in this book of advice, to help facilitate more understanding or exposure to this room and to these students and what they're doing?
I think the main thing is to understand that learning happens in many different ways. And look, in the best regular education classrooms, we have moved away from a strict lecture style, but that never worked for me anyway. Learning looks different for every child. So the administrator, and I was blessed with some wonderful administrators, either they had some experience in this area or they had no experience in it, but they were open to learning. Because when you came in my classroom, somebody could mistake what you were seeing in there for chaos, but it wasn't chaos. It was learning just in a very messy, authentic way. And I think as an administrator, if you understand that learning takes place in all kinds of ways, in and outside of the classroom, And I use a classic example in the book of something that I did do with children. You take a look at a picnic. If you're on the school grounds, if you as a teacher with your intellectually disabled students and several aides, somebody could go by and have one of two incorrect responses. And that could be either, oh, look, they're not doing any work at all today. They're just sitting there having a picnic. Or what is it that they are doing? This just looks like some kind of chaotic mess out here. And really, the teacher who is working with this population knows that a picnic is a perfect authentic activity. And it's not, it could be a reward for something that's happened in the classroom, behavior charts, or you had to go through state testing, and they're having a picnic to celebrate that. But it's also an authentic activity. Maybe you had to talk to the children about what a picnic is. And maybe you voted on what kind of sandwiches. You decided we couldn't give everybody the sandwich of their dreams, so we're going to have just two different kinds of sandwiches. Maybe you voted on that and you tallied up those numbers. But it's not just tallying like in a workbook. It's authentic. And maybe the child who's not getting exactly what she wants has to deal socially with the disappointment. Maybe your principal needs to give you permission for this, so you need to use social skills, the children, to go to the principal and make eye contact and say, please, may we do this? Maybe you need to look at the weather report to see when the day is best to do this. And maybe you need a plan B in case all of a sudden the weather report is wrong, which never happens, of course, but maybe once it does. And maybe you need to do a whole bunch of other things to get ready for this day. Talk about appropriate clothing. Talk about what games you'll play after the food. Make the sandwiches, of course. All of those things are authentic learning things that you really can't get from a textbook. And the administrator who applauds that and gives permission for that, and who, depending on your district, of course, even funds some of this, really, truly respects and understands these children and respects and understands the teachers and staff that are doing activities such as this.
So, you know, you talk about that. And one of the things that really made me think about that example of stepping back and looking at what could possibly be going on instead of just making a snap judgment, it really kind of opens up the idea that we all need to take a deeper look or dig deeper into what is seen as appropriate methods of understanding and ways to teach and ways to learn. So I wonder how applicable the things you talk about in your book are to general ed as well, not just your students that have intellectual disabilities or developmental delays, because we talk a lot about good teaching is good teaching. And a lot of times when you talk about special education, teaching students with special education, the accommodations or modifications that you make, it's just good teaching. So is that the disconnect, I wonder, that we get too caught up in sometimes the rigid structure of a lesson or assessments, where we should be taking more of the advice from your book?
I think definitely taking the advice from my book is a great way to go. And I think you're right that, as I said earlier too, we've moved away from a strict lecture type of modality in teaching. And there's all kinds. When I used to take a walk from my classroom during my break to the library, it always took me three times longer than it should, because I was always snooping in everybody else's regular ed classrooms and looking at their bulletin boards, because it was so inspiring to see what my colleagues were doing when that whole idea of creativity was allowed to bloom. Regular ed kids are kids. Special ed kids are kids. Good teaching is good teaching. What is special education? It's just some wonderful ways of teaching that we can use with anybody. And we actually had, and I do have a chapter about it, a number of, well, let's call them student helpers, really. I was going to say student teachers, but student helpers, because my students attracted so much attention in the hallways, usually for good reasons, and sometimes out of curiosity. You know, why is that child crying? Or why is that child running in the other direction? Or why? And we had a bunch of students who became very interested in helping out in the classroom. And it was a wonderful thing. And they got to see what teaching was like for these students. And they got to see sometimes their teachers were doing similar things too, putting kids in groups, doing hands-on experiments. And that was a great experience too, for having my children be better understood throughout a building where we were the only class for severely intellectually disabled children. So that did help. And yeah, it really kind of brought home the idea that good teaching is good teaching, as you so very aptly said.
Supporting your teachers and students seems to be a struggle. They just don't seem to be engaged. You wish they would take more responsibility for their learning and culture of the building, but they just don't seem to be empowered enough to do it. So my question is, have you checked out the book Seeing to Lead yet? It's all about creating a true educational experience where learning, growth, leadership, and community take center stage. Full of strategies and resources, Seeing to Lead is about attaining that goal by employing a model that supports, engages, and empowers all individuals to become leaders themselves. Pick up a copy today at seeingtolead.com. That's SEEINGTOLEAD.com. Remember, you don't become a leader and then decide you need to support and recognize others more than yourself. It is the moment you realize it's about supporting and recognizing others that you become a leader. Seeingtolead.com.
So talk to the administrators listening to this podcast for just a second. What can they do to unlock or help teachers unlock that creativity, especially your special education teachers that are working with these moderate to severe intellectually disabled students?
I think administrators need to understand their teachers, need to listen to them, and then listen to them again. Listen to what they're saying, listen to what they're not saying. And see, you know, funding is a huge thing. You know, you can be creative without money. You can do all kinds of wonderful things. But the truth is, we know all teachers are spending money out of their pocket. I won't say that special educators are spending more, because I think it would be disrespectful to my regular ed colleagues. We're all spending money. But special ed teachers are looking for all kinds of other supplies that they can't always find. If they're working with children who are not at the cognitive age as other children in the caseload, that becomes a problem. And that used to be a challenge for me. I was in a high school setting, but my students, some of them, were on kindergarten level. To get kindergarten level materials was a real challenge, because it was, you know, the round peg trying to go into the square hole. And administrators who realized that, and realize that we might need other materials, who spend time in the classroom to get to know the children, who spend time with the teacher, maybe have some certain meetings that are just with those teachers, check and see how they're doing. It's a stressful job. And you know, just kind of stay tuned in. Many children with intellectual disabilities don't need you to find them. They'll find you. They will comment on your tie, and they will comment on the music that you're playing if they're in your office. Make them part of the family. Include them. I will say that it was sometimes done out of just sheer forgetfulness, or sheer not realizing, never out of being mean or not trying to be inclusive. But sometimes I'd have to go to administrators and say, oh, you know what? I heard there's an assembly coming up. Can we be part of that too? There's a Thanksgiving drive. Can we be part of that? Oh, sure you can, but I'm not sure. Okay, can I give you some suggestions as to how my children could be helpful in this Thanksgiving drive? And we did. We had children of mine who were non-readers sorting cans. Cans have pictures. And so if you're just really tuned in, and if you're a good administrator, you're tuned into your population anyway. Sometimes it just takes a little bit of fine tuning to realize that, yes, these are students in my school. They need the same attention as everybody else. Let me not exclude them. If I'm not sure, let me talk to the teachers. There were assemblies sometimes that we were invited to that I would go to my administrator and say, look, I always want to be included, except this is not an assembly that I think would benefit my kids. It's going to be very long. It's going to have not very many visuals. Could we excuse ourselves from this with all respect? And I did get that respect back from the administrators. So it was just all part of listening and respecting and just expanding the family.
You know, I think, and those are great points, the idea of just knowing your population, both students and teachers. And I think that's an important message for coworkers as well. So fellow staff members, I think they really need to try and understand what life is like in those classrooms and get to know the students in that population and almost make it like a goal of theirs.
It should be. And there's something about working with children with severe disabilities that teachers get comments sometimes, well-meaning, certainly well-meaning. And I think we take well-meaning comments, even if they're not accurate, with acceptance and with love. But I am not a saint. We get told that a lot. Oh, you're a saint for dealing with these children. No, I was a paid employee of the Yonkers Public Schools who happened to love her children. I love them, and I still do. I'm still in touch with many, many of them and their families. But no, I'm not a saint, because that kind of means that I'm not with the rest of the teachers and I'm a fellow teacher. Oh, I don't know how you do it. Well, I do it the same way that everybody else does it. I go one day at a time, sometimes 1 minute at a time. And if there are tantrums in my classroom sometimes, I'll bet there's tantrums in your classroom too once in a while. It just may look a little bit different. I think teachers, just like our students, sometimes feel a bit left out because there's things about them that are different than the other kids. You know, they're not playing on the varsity football team. You have to watch your teachers also, whether it is whether you're an administrator and that teacher is working in your building, or whether you're a coworker, to make sure that the teachers teaching those children aren't feeling that same kind of exclusion or that same kind of feeling different, where there's a meeting. Okay, everybody, we're having a meeting after school. English teachers go to this room, math teachers go to this room. And many times a teacher like myself would say, well, where do I go? And it almost becomes a metaphysical question more than which door do I go in?
Yeah.
And I think that's something to be aware of also, that the teachers teaching these children are still educators. And that needs to be remembered too.
You know, it almost comes down to the word that keeps coming to mind for me as I listen to you talk about this. And I'd love to know your thoughts on this, but I keep thinking of the word value and valued. And when you're talking about being left out of a PD opportunity or a PD opportunity that you, unfortunately, you're not left out of it, you get to sit through it, even though it doesn't have to do with you. But being left out of a PD opportunity or your students not being invited to something, it really sends a message about how you're seen or how your value is looked at. And I think it's really important to make sure we're showing teachers such as yourself that you're valued, just like all the other teachers, and making sure that your students feel that they're valued as well and see that they're valued by including them. Do you have some ways or some examples where it's really easy to show that? Or, you know, even though it might take a little bit of work, that's something very important for schools to show, that students that are, you know, moderate to severe intellectually disabled, and the teachers that teach this population, they're all valued just as much, if not even more, than the next person.
It's a very, very important thing. I think a lot of it comes from including the children. You know, I mentioned the Thanksgiving drive, which is something that is true and real. And actually, that happened, of course, early in the school year in November. And the first year that we did that, where we asked permission for our children to be part of it, it opened the door to some other things. And then we were able to make decorations for the holiday concert for Christmas. Or when we started doing the high school, because my school only went up to eighth grade for the longest time. And then gradually went 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. So I was the middle school teacher for these children. And then I graduated right along with them to become their high school teacher. And I wanted to put an even greater emphasis on real world authentic activities. And I remember one of the first things that we did was we made placemats for the senior citizen home in the community, which showed, because my students were maybe not always completely understood, but they were sometimes completely spoiled. And they were the very happy recipients of people giving them cookies and, there were all kinds of things that were wonderful because it meant that they were loved. But I wanted them also to see the children themselves and the greater community in the school that we can give also. We're not just here to be given cookies, although I have nothing against cookies whatsoever. People often forgot to offer them to me, but my children were getting them all the time. But we were part, we could give also, and we could do things in the school. We could be the greeter when the preschool children were coming in the morning. We could do all kinds of things to show that we were part of that greater school community. And that made the time there more valuable for everybody.
You know, I love that example that you gave because it draws that clear line between being maybe appreciated or being spoiled, as you were saying, and valued, and truly actually valued for contributing. And I think that's such an important distinction to make. But I am, you know, I like the things that you're talking about. I really like the examples you gave. And as we get to the end of this podcast, I do ask everybody that comes on two questions. And I'm really excited to hear these two questions or your two answers to the questions. The first one is, because it's so tied to you, you wrote a book after you retired. Who, not what would you be if you weren't in education, if you weren't an educator?
It's hard for me to imagine myself not having been an educator. I made that decision, believe it or not, when I was 8 years old, not to be an educator, but to work with special needs kids. And that really had to do with the influence of my brother. But I had thought about at some point writing, and things came around full circle for me that I would start doing this kind of writing. And, you know, it's the answer that it's kind of trips me up a bit because I identify so much as an educator. So I guess I would still be writing and caring and looking for opportunities to work with people who had a need that I could fill and they could fill the need that I had to teach and educate and be around them.
And that being said, the most important piece of advice you would give to leaders as they work to better support, engage, and empower those they serve?
I would ask them to do two things. One we had mentioned earlier, which was to listen, to really, really listen. And the other one is to remember what it was like to be in a classroom, to remember not just to what it was like to be in the classroom as a teacher, maybe earlier in their careers, but to remember what it was like to be a student in the classroom, to really do what we say all the time, to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and really understand where they're coming from. I think it makes for much greater understanding among all of the different groups in the school, and it makes for a happier home away from home.
Fantastic. You know, it's funny that you mentioned, right, everybody says listen, but I think, honestly, you're the first person that has ever said remember and remember what it was like to be in a classroom. And as you said that, I started to drift a little bit about, yeah, hey, what was it like when I was a student in the classroom? And I have glimpses now and then, but that's such a powerful thing to manage our expectations around what we're seeing. Because I find that, at least with myself, I can't speak for others, I have to consciously think about how I remember things because of the narrative that I give myself. I don't want to say 30 years into the after they've happened, but okay, 30 years. But that are not always accurate because they're colored a little bit different. But when I really, really think about them, I find it helps me when I'm interacting with students and trying to put myself in their shoes, like you were saying. So I really love the idea of remembering.
Thank you. It's made a big difference for me that I've always found that my students, whether they were verbal or not, there was always a reason for what they were doing. And I was very short-tempered with people who just kind of gave, oh, he's doing that thing again, or, oh, just ignore him. Or there's always a reason that somebody is doing something. And whether it's important to you or not is completely immaterial, because it's important to that child in that moment. You can't always get to everything in that moment, but everything that child's doing, there's a reason for it, and you can uncover it. And it works for adults too. If you have a teacher, if you're an administrator and one of your teachers is acting differently than she usually does or than he usually does, there's a reason for that. And maybe you are able to continue the relationship that you have with that professional, see what's going on. And that also contributes to making that school building a happier home.
That note, I can't imagine somebody not wanting to, one, pick up a copy of your book. So where can we find that?
It is on Amazon. It is in hardcover. It is in soft cover. It's even in ebook if for people who prefer that modality.
Okay.
And it's there.
And read it cover to cover, right?
Absolutely. It will just be the greatest thing you have ever done.
No,
I'm grateful for anybody who takes it and reads it. And my hope above all else is that it makes somebody smile and it benefits them.
Perfect. And the title of it is Life Skills, a Handbook for Parents and Teachers of the Intellectually Disabled. Now, what I can imagine is people picking up this book, reading it cover to cover, and then wanting to reach out to you. So what's the best way to reach out to you if they have any questions or want to follow up with you?
I would be happy to. I have a Facebook page.
Okay.
It's Ron Sherry Pierce, and maybe we can make the information available. And I do give out my email address, and I'm always happy, always to answer questions and give advice or support.
Perfect. I'll link all this stuff up in the show notes too, but I find when you've mentioned modalities a couple times, I find if people hear it, awesome. They see it in the show notes and it's easy to access. They can just click on a link. So we'll have all that information there as well.
Perfect. Thank you.
Well, Sherry, thank you very much for taking the time today. You've said some really good things for the listeners to think about, and I just appreciate you and appreciate the work you've done and coming on the show.
Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
Well, that's a wrap, but not the end. Next step, be sure to take action on something you heard here today. Hey, thanks for listening to the Seen to Lead podcast. If you would like to connect for any reason, email me at drchrissj@gmail.com or catch me on Twitter at Dr. C.S. Jones. If you've gotten any value from the Seen to Lead podcast today, you can help me and other leaders create a world-class environment through a teacher-centric approach by subscribing to the show, leaving an honest rating or review, and sharing this episode on social media with your most valuable takeaway. Also, one last thing. Have you had a chance to pick up my latest 5-star rated book yet? Grab your copy of Seeing to Lead anywhere you buy books or at seeingtolead.com. That's SEEINGTOLEAD.com, where you can learn more and continue to improve. Now go have a successful week.
And now a quick word from our sponsor, Jigsaw Learning. Whether you lead at the school, district, or division level, you're serving a wide array of students, and you know that no one person has all the answers when it comes to meeting each of their needs. That's why Jigsaw Learning helps leaders and their staff and faculty to develop a collaborative approach. Every child deserves a team, and when you put together the pieces of effective collaboration, you can realize that team's full potential. Connection, relationships, and authentic collaboration are at the foundation of Jigsaw Learning's work. Through professional learning presented on-site, online, or a blend of both, Jigsaw's team of experienced learning associates works with you to develop a personalized plan to help collaborative response thrive in your organization. Learn why educators have described working with Jigsaw Learning as powerful, wonderful, and beneficial for all students. Visit jigsawlearning.ca and connect with the team for information. That's jigsawlearning.ca.
There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design and SIS integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.